Maybe, writes Lewis, this is not the best of all possible worlds, but it just may be the only possible kind of world for the experiment God wanted to try. In other words, maybe the only way God could ensure free will for every creature was to have the kind of world we have, with a neutral, stable earth that often allows for pain. Hope that makes sense. I think it's kind of interesting. Now, in Lewis's discussion of the world that God created, we see a little bit of Lewis the fantasy writer who wrote the Chronicles of Narnia that we'll look at in the second half of this series. In fact, Lewis often used the word sub-creator. It's a word he learned from Tolkien, who did The Lord of the Rings. And Lewis always tried to be a sub-creator, to sort of create and fashion his own world. But there's a difference. You see, when Lewis puts together a world, he puts it together piece by piece. But when God creates, he doesn't do it like we do. When God fashioned the infinite complexities of nature, he did so in a single flash of divine creativity. He said, let there be light, perhaps let there be free will, and boom. So God, it's all of a piece when God creates. All right, I'm going to come back in a moment to pain, but I want to move on to miracles now and discuss that in the same context. As for miracles, Lewis says, people do not see them so much as a violation of the power or goodness of God as they do with pain. Rather, they see miracles as a violation of God's dignity and of the integrity of his universe. Miracles are sloppy to many modern people, let's put it that way. Indeed, writes Lewis, most moderns, and that includes, I'm afraid to say, much of the clergy, Much of the clergy just takes for granted that miracles don't happen. They may believe in the power of positive thinking, but they don't believe miracles happen. And Lewis says this is a position that they claim to have arrived at through a scientific analysis of the facts, but in fact, it is forced upon them by an a priori rejection of miracles. This is the way it works. You take for granted miracles don't happen. And so when you see the parting of the Red Sea, you've got to come up with a natural explanation for it. But once you come up with a natural explanation for it, you use it as proof that miracles don't happen. You see, it's a tautology. Now, you could argue that Christians do that too, but the point is Christians will generally admit it. Moderns won't. They want to say they're doing induction when Lewis says they're really doing deduction. Let me give you a great example. I once saw this cartoon, three men in it. One is an agnostic, one is an atheist, one is a Christian. The agnostic approaches his friends and says, what do you think happened to Jesus' body? Well, the Christian says, I believe that God raised him from the dead. Then he asks the agnostic. The atheist says, I believe that a starship flew over Palestine that day, pulled up Jesus in its transporter, and took him away to another dimension. The agnostic thinks about it for a moment and says, I'll go with the scientific explanation, and points at the atheist. What am I saying? What I'm saying and what Lewis is saying is that for modern man, he will often resort to the most improbable rational explanation rather than accept a far more probable miracle. We'll do anything to not have to accept a miracle. We'll come up with all sorts of things. I still believe that it takes more faith to believe in evolution than creation. To believe in creation, all you got to believe in is a powerful, loving God. To believe in evolution, you got to believe in all sorts of factors that just, you know, to me couldn't have happened. But what I'm saying is that we are so against the supernatural and miracles that we'll come up with any other explanation to avoid it. And again, we think it's induction, but it's often deduction. Now, Lewis explains this in a very helpful way. Part of the reason why we're so resistant to miracles, even Christians sometimes are resistant to miracles, Lewis says, is that we misunderstand the laws of nature. You see, most people think that the laws of nature define events when they really define a sequence or process. Let me explain. This is an example. If I drop a vase, gravity will pull that vase down and smash it. That is the law of gravity. That cannot be broken or altered. But what if my other hand swoops down and grabs the vase before it smashes? Now look what's happened. I have not broken the law of gravity. All I have done is added in another factor. Do you understand? The laws of nature do not say, drop a vase and it breaks. It says, if you drop a vase, the natural sequence or process will be that it will shatter. But if somebody, another hand comes in and stops it, the law of nature has been suspended, but it hasn't been broken. A lot of naturalists like to use the example of a billiard table. If you hit the ball, You know, if you hit the cue ball, the other balls will go in a certain pattern. Well, Lewis would agree, but what happens if a hand reaches out and shakes the table? You've added a new factor, and it will change. Again, the other factor suspends rather than destroys the sequence of events. To go back to my initial explanation, if I drop the vase with my other hand, it's going to smash.